went there about three other people on Sunday night from 6 to 7, 5 to 6 to 7, to give the mothers a break and to watch the little kids. So it was fun.
Was that in the old church? Huh? Was that in the old church?
Oh, this is at Wayside.
Oh, at Wayside. Oh, okay, that's right.
Then the parents decided they want to take the shop. Okay. Bye. Bye. You want it? You got it. One more minute.
This job, okay. Give me a little bit.
Oh, thanks.
Hope Israel comes down.
There's a lot of kids I was through this much just kind of kids that have really nice.
Oh, it was
that's true.
Well, someone told me that there are street people and street people don't mind. They want to. She down the box, she moved, and her job was to take meds out to the street. She said,
okay, 10:01. Okay, I guess getting around. Got a couple more people signing in. Morning, everybody. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Let's take a moment. Consciously breathe, expand, soften. Let us each become as open and as aware as we can be at this moment. Knowing that we are joined with hearts and minds, souls, spirits, with many, many other beings who are consciously working on expansion, growth, evolution, transformation. And with that realization comes a very deep sense of gratitude that we have this time together and that we share this time and space with many other beings. You are never alone. So, good morning again. Before we get started on today's lesson, I'm going to suggest we take a few minutes to begin to become aware of the difference between, we might say, higher and lower consciousness. What they are calling Christ consciousness or the upper room or higher consciousness. How do you know you are in higher consciousness rather than lower consciousness? What are you doing? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? What are you hoping for? What are you connected to differently than you might be one way or the other? So if I were to say, for instance, on Sunday morning, that we are in the upper room, we are in a higher state of consciousness, what makes that different from the person who walked through the door 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes ago, the person just came online? Or what's going to be different from the person who walks out of this door in about an hour or so? Am I going to be consciously shifting from one state of mind to the other? Or does it just happen? How do I know? How do I know I am in the upper room? How do I know that I'm seeing? All of these are kind of not metaphors necessarily, but essentially the same thing. How do I know that I'm seeing with the eyes of the Christ? Might be another way of putting that. And if I realize that I'm not seeing with the eyes of the Christ, how do I get there? So, for instance, if I were to take a political figure and say, I choose to see you with the eyes of the Christ, am I just overlooking the things that piss me off? The things that annoy me and just pretending they're not there? Or am I somehow or another able to see through them to something higher, something better, something more graceful? That's an open-ended question. I'm not going to answer that for you.
You're able to choose it?
Pardon me, John?
Can you choose it or does it just happen?
That's a great question. Can you choose it, or just does it just happen? Let's take a real simple example. I'm holding a baby, or a kitten, or a puppy. What does that do to my state and consciousness? Let's suppose I was thinking about something really, really negative. Or getting even with somebody. Or saying, when they said this, I should have said this. You know, I'm sure you don't do this, but those conversations you have in your mind. And I realized that somehow or another, in holding this baby, holding this child, holding this kitten, holding this puppy, or smelling a flower, or listening to a wonderful piece of music, that somehow or another, something has changed, something has shifted. The other things that bother me or annoy me or make me crazy are still there. It's just somehow or another, in a way that John's question reflects, is it a choice or is it something that just happens? Now here's where it gets confusing, if it's not confusing already. My feelings are not always choices. Sometimes my feelings are knee-jerk reactions. If my feelings were always choices, then it would be silly to think that one morning I wake up and say, well, I think I'll be depressed today. No, nobody does that. But it happens, doesn't it? Not with me consciously willing it to happen, but it does. So in some cases, it's not a choice. It's something that happens, or a reaction that happens occurs. What we're getting to here is, who's in charge here? And if the higher self or higher consciousness is in charge here, then why isn't it working all the time? Why am I not happy, joyous, and free? Instead of being angry, irritable, and discontent. I'm just throwing this stuff out because I think it's important for each one of us, myself included, to be able to get a sense of what they're really talking about here and make it something beyond words, beyond the conscious idea. How do I make this practically conscious in my life? Because I'm not always going to be able to walk around having a baby in my arms, or a puppy, or a kitten, or listening to a wonderful piece of music, or let's suppose I'm feeling down, depressed, I'd like to be able to get out of that. Do I get out of that just by snapping my fingers? Say Shazam, and it's gone? Or does it require some work on my part? And the work on my part, is it my lower consciousness trying to create higher consciousness? Or is the work on my part surrender to what is, saying, I don't know. I don't know when this dark cloud is going to be lifted, but I know that it will be, and I know that it can be, and I know that it will happen. And so I will allow myself as best I possibly can to be in the space of openness to a consciousness that is more or greater than the negativity that I might be seemingly holding on to. What else can I do? I can fight it, I can struggle, I say, that's not me. But it is me at that moment. It'd be silly for me to say, well, I'm really not depressed. I know that's, but here's another loop in the situation. I'm not really, the part of me that's, Ram Dass went through this little exercise one time and I really liked it. He said, when I was counseling people, he said a lot of times somebody would come in and say, I'm depressed. And I would say, are you really depressed? I'm really depressed. Even my, I'm just totally depressed. He said, does the part of you that knows you're depressed, is that depressed? Person would stop for a minute and say, well, no. It just knows I'm depressed. We have a little window here of part of you that is not depressed. How can we open that window a little bit more? How can we expand that piece of consciousness rather than the piece of consciousness that says, I'm down, I'm depressed? Is that a choice? The choice is which dog am I going to feed? But I don't know exactly when all of that fog is going to be lifted. I just know that it will be. So is it a choice? Choice about which dog I'm going to feed? You know that story, don't you, about the two wolves and two dogs or whatever. But it's also something that's going to happen, because it's going to happen through my higher consciousness, which is not where fear or judgment abide anyway to begin with. And I don't know when, time-wise, that is going to happen. When is this fog going to be lifted? I just know that it will be. And my job this is just my perspective. My job, my perspective, is to open myself up to that higher level of consciousness that is where the healing takes place. I might not feel it at that particular moment. I might not be experiencing it then, but I know that it's there because I know it always has been there. Jim.
What you said is very similar to what I do or endeavor to.
Can you guys hear him okay? Or does he need to be louder? Okay, a little bit louder.
Okay, what I endeavor to do. So if there is a challenge or a situation and I've identified it's, I'm feeling this way. So I say to Jim, this too shall pass. And the tagline for me on this too shall pass, I have no idea when it will pass or how it will pass, but it will pass. And then my consciousness goes to other things, other challenges, other situations that Jim has been through, it has passed. So I again, it's, if I'm right in the midst, in the thick of it, I have to calm myself and say, oh, I'm not crazy about where I'm at right now. But I know that it will pass. I have no idea how it's going to. I guess maybe that's, in a sense, maybe surrendering to the higher conscious. Like, okay, gotcha.
That's the way I would put it, yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I would extend that a little bit to say, not only this too shall pass, but this is passing. And I might not be something that I can measure, but I know that it is. Now, my little ego wants to pop in and say, well, maybe it's passed another time, but this time it's not going to.
This time it's going to stick.
I know that one. After all of these years, spring has come, but it might not, it's not going to happen this time. That's just the power of that we have given our lower consciousness. Again, not deliberately, but it's probably something that we've learned and something that we've taken in. So this is a whole different sphere. This is not like picking up a self-help book. This is a whole different sphere of reality that we're talking about here, of moving from lower ego personality consciousness to higher consciousness, Christ consciousness, whatever words you want to call it, and allowing that. And see, the movement doesn't happen by pushing my lower self to stop being an idiot and let go of whatever it's holding on to. That's what it would make me think. It comes about with saying, here is where I'm at, and I know that I have a limited vision or a limited perception of who I am when I am in this state of mind, when I am in this state of consciousness. I understand that. So in order to be able to get into higher consciousness, all that I know how to do through my conscious awareness is to open myself up to the higher consciousness that is always available to me. And when that switch happens, when somebody pushes the board, when I kind of go from, oh, I can breathe again, I've got some room in here, I got some space, I got a little bit more laughter than I had a moment ago, a little bit less sadness, a little bit less stuckness. I go, don't try to figure that out because you can't. The higher consciousness is not about figuring out what's going on in lower consciousness. Higher consciousness is about tapping, how did Marianne Williamson put it, tapping the ego on the head and say, thank you for sharing. And then kind of just kind of gently moving on. I think you'll see how that fits in today's lesson. At least I hope so.
Jerry.
I felt like there was a need for a little bit more of an introduction. Yeah, John.
So you're just, this is a great introduction, a great way to start. I have a bunch of things going through my head. One is, you and Jack used to teach certain lessons, and part of what I drew from that was it's about what I'm thinking about. When I talk to new alcoholics, I point out to them that it's not about thinking, I'm not going to drink, I'm not going to drink, I'm not going to drink. That tends to be because they're thinking about drinking when they say that. But if they will change their thinking to something else, about something loving, something they're going to do that doesn't involve drinking, then they can focus on that. But thinking about not drinking is thinking about drinking. So that was one thought that came to my head. If I'm thinking about, oh man, the bills are piling up, well, that's not going to help you. But what can I do right now that can help you? One of the things that I did this week that was very useful to me, I read something spiritual in the morning and at night. This week I was really challenged. And you and Jack talked a lot about, I think it came from the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament. We were talking through there. It's our thoughts that drive our feelings, not immediately, but over time. And so this week, I mentioned last week about the book by Marianne Williamson that I'm reading. Well, I've got all these highlights in there. And so once an hour, my little alarm on my watch would go off, and I would read the highlights from just a couple pages. Took me 20, 30 seconds. But boy, I always felt better. That day went better than any other that I've had all week.
Mm-hmm.
It's about choosing, what am I thinking about right now? It's not about not facing the situation or anything like that, but it is about faith. Thanks.
Thanks, John. I think, speaking of Marianne Williamson, she said something that along these same lines. What thoughts am I thinking that God is not thinking? Especially, what thoughts am I thinking about myself that God is not thinking? That's where the choice is. Now, when I make that choice of, let's say, the God-centered thoughts or the ego-centered thoughts, my feelings are not going to change immediately. They still have some roots. They still have some substance in my lower consciousness. So don't expect changing my thoughts is going to change my feeling. It is eventually, but not immediately, if that makes any sense. So I think the expectation, a lot of times, the small self-expectation is, once I change my thoughts, my feelings are going to change immediately or immaculately right afterwards. That usually does not happen that way. It requires some work, as John said, requires some work on changing, not only changing, but choosing to change those feelings that are going on, or those thoughts that are going on that are producing those feelings.
Jerry?
Yeah, Jim.
Just added to maybe what John said. What I do, I have been doing for years, and it's, someone were to watch in terms of what I do in the morning, it's a whole setting myself up for the day. And you know, it's meditation. There's affirmative speaking. I can barely kind of shave in the morning, man, because I have all these affirmations kind of plastered like in my mirror in my bathroom. But when I don't do it, and it's rarely I don't do it. I don't, for me, I have to center my day around that. I will not walk outside my door without getting myself right mentally because I'll forget. Jim will forget. And I forget even if I've done that, but it's I have this thing that I just think about muscle memory. I believe like in conscious memory. So if it's there, you know, if there's something or someone that comes there, you know, say, oh, okay. And it's there just to kind of, for me, just to like, let me kind of pause and reset, because I continue to have the willingness to go ahead and do the work. So, I mean, it's just, I mean, to give myself a couple hours, you know? But for me, it's worth it.
Sure. And it's important to realize that we are not creating higher consciousness. Higher consciousness is always there. It's not something we're doing so much as something we are opening ourselves to. So I'd like to begin on page XX20, part of our introduction here. And I think you'll see why we started off that way. I don't usually do that, but felt like it was important for me. Because you teach what you want to learn. Now, some of you say to us, this is the bottom of page 20, Roman numeral 20. I just want a happy life. I want a little less pain, a little more joy, far less worry. Will I have that if I do what you say, if I follow the rules? Indeed, and more. But that's what this book is all about. This is a book of recreation and recognition of who you have been, how you perceive yourself, and what you have seen and perceived in a limited strata of the world you've known yourself through is necessary. In other words, I need to be able to be honest with myself and say, here's how I have perceived myself in the past. Here's how I perceive myself now. Now, some of you say to us, well, I've been to the upper room. It's rather nice, but I can't imagine living there. There is an aspect of each of you. You may call it the monad. Monad means unity, oneness, union with God. There is an aspect of each of you you may call the monad if you wish, that is in full residence there, conscious contact, that abides there fully in higher consciousness. The operation we undertake with our students is supporting you each in aligning all aspects of self in agreement to the monad. In other words, there is nothing outside of oneness. There can't be. Anything you put outside oneness or think about being, as soon as you put, how did I put it one way? You can't put your brother in the dark and expect to see the light. You put one thing or incident or person in the darkness or say, you don't belong in the light. I put everyone and everything there. That, I don't think I do that, but that's what happens. There is an aspect of each of you, call it the monad, if you wish, that is in full residence there, that abides there fully. The operation we undertake with our students is supporting you each in aligning all aspects of self in agreement to the monad. We have done this through intention and indeed attunement. When we attune our students, we simply support each of you in aligning to a level of tone that is already playing. You do not summon the upper room. You enter the upper room. It is already present. But you have been hindered from the entrance through me. Here's what we were getting at this morning, earlier. But you have been hindered from entrance through many things. The collective agreement that it cannot be so. The fear that you have of what happens to you if you go. The belief that you could become lost there, perhaps go mad, perhaps imagine the self as separate from others. In fact, when you move to the upper room in vibration, you are simply moving to a tone of sound, of creation, of consciousness, where the manifestation of the Christ is agreement itself. the manifestation of the Christ is agreement itself. It's already there. It's perfect. It is agreement. The manifestation of the monad or Christ itself is agreement. It is agreement to the truth of who and what you are. How often during a day do I truly remember that? Or do I get caught up in the circumstances of life? Because life's going to catch you. Life's going to catch you up. How many times during a day do I realize I am one with all beings? I am in the upper room. I am in higher consciousness. I choose to remain there as best I possibly can. I bring you with me. I bring my memories, my thoughts, my feelings about you. I bring those with me to the higher room, the room of higher consciousness. How often during a day am I really, really aware of that? See, that's why I'm so grateful for Sunday mornings. Because I can walk out of here 5 minutes from now and forget about it. And when I get, let's say when I get to do my evening prayers, I go, oh, it's 10 o'clock, time for my evening prayer. Where was I between 10 o'clock in the morning and 10 o'clock in the evening?
Jerry?
Yeah, Paul.
Thank you for saying all these, the last things you've talked about, because that in itself, like how many times a day are we in that higher space of feeling that our oneness? And how much of the day am I spent and just absorbed in all the happenings around, you know, just caught up in it? It's really, again, just that remembrance of the practice of staying in, say, upper room consciousness, of realizing those truths that actually move us through the day more positively, I feel. Thanks for all you've, I'll be leaving soon. Thanks for everything that's been said today from you, John, and Jim. And it's been great. And I'll see you Tuesday.
Thanks, Paula. I'm thinking about, I'll send this along with my reflection, because I know I've sent this out some other times. But there's a piece from, record album by the Moody Blues called The Question of Balance. And it ends with a poem. And the poem is all really about transformation of consciousness. And I'm not going to try and repeat it right now because it's too beautiful to just try and put into words. But I will send it along, and I would encourage you guys, if you're interested, to give it a listen. It's called The Balance. Now, when you align to this understanding, the understanding being that divine consciousness is not only part of your being, it is your being. Divine consciousness is the essential way of being able to perceive yourself. When you align to this understanding, I have moved to a level of tone where the manifestation of the monad is implicit, and I am about to undergo the changes that it ensues. I'm holding the baby. I'm holding the puppy. I'm holding the kitten. Somehow or another, without having to think about it, that being that I am holding in my hand has allowed my consciousness to shift from one of self-centeredness or negativity or judgment or fear to one of open-hearted loving. I didn't do anything to do that. It just happened. Well, it didn't just happen. But somehow or another, this thing, this material object, puppy, baby, kitten. Put me in a frame of consciousness that allowed my alignment to my higher self to come, and my awareness of my alignment to my higher self to come about really, really easily and really, really gently. You don't have to do anything. And that's kind of, for me anyway, that's kind of the universe saying, what would it be like if you could allow that to happen without the baby, without the puppy, without the kitten? Because it's still there. You don't need a button to push. The awareness of who, the truth of who you are, the alignment to divine consciousness is already there. It always has been. I am about to undergo the changes that it ensues. You will have some comfort when the change come, because indeed they will. Anyone, careful this one now. Anyone who follows these teachings is going to have an encounter with the idea of personality and all of its uses and devices. Because we've created that, that's part of our vehicle. Our personality or ego structure. Once you understand who you have been, how you have chosen, how you have overlaid a reality, an entire world with selfishness, with fear, with anger, with vengeance, you will begin to move beyond it. And the gift of the times that you choose to embody in is all that are going to encounter this. In fully realized fashion. And my poor little ego goes, oh shit. What's gonna happen to me? Is there gonna be anything left? There was a song, I think it was in the 70s by a singer by the name of Melanie, and it was called A Little Bit of Me. And that was the question she was asked. If I surrender to the truth of what is there going to be anything left? And the fear, of course, the fear is on the ego side of things that it's going to die, it's going to disappear, or it's going to be discounted. I remember when I made my first deep act of surrender in recovery, when I was kind of face to face with surrendering to my addiction. And I remember thinking to myself, I have no idea what I'm surrendering to. That what might be on the other side of surrender might be worse than what's on this side. That was part of my, that was my ego's thinking. I didn't think about it that way at that particular moment. But I was at such a point of debilitation that I said, I don't care if the other side of surrender is worse than this side. I can't stand no more. I can't do this. I can't keep doing what I'm doing. And what they're suggesting here is that everybody experiences that same sort of fear or hesitation. And yet at the same time, there is that realization of a deeper truth behind whatever it is I might be afraid of. And the gift of the times that you choose to embody in is that all are going to encounter this and in fully realized fashion. You can't run away from the truth of who you are. Like Jerry. Francis Thompson said in his poem, Hound of Heaven, right? Eventually he's going to catch you. You can run as far and as fast as you would like. It's going to catch you. Love is going to conquer you. Love is going to conquer your fear. Maybe not now, maybe not 5 minutes from now, maybe not 20 minutes from now, maybe not even this lifetime.
Jerry.
It is inevitable. Yes, John.
So I think this is relevant. I've mentioned in here before that I went through a ropes course years and years ago, 30 feet up in the air doing stuff. And the teachers would say, well, now do it backwards, now do it upside down. And I was perfectly safe the whole time, but it never felt safe. And I had, but I was able to take that and use that later. A few days later, on a weekend, a team and I were putting together a workshop. It was an incredibly important workshop for the future of the company. And we were trying to build the final pieces of it. And I became aware that I was terrified. I meditated. Then I closed everything up and I went home. On Monday, I went to the vice president I reported to and I said, it's not going to work. We've got to cancel this workshop. He says, John, it starts tomorrow. People are already flying here to do it. You're going to do it one way or the other. If it fails, it fails. I immediately got back to work and finished designing the workshop. It turned into one of the most successful experiences the participants and I have ever had. But I had given up. And but being told, no, you can't avoid this. And I took it as a learning experience that, okay, sometimes I just have to trust and keep going. Thanks.
What was the final result, John?
The final result was that I got promoted to be the director of the corporate university.
Okay. Things happen, things change. I mean, how much time we got left? What's time?
40.
Okay, I think we might, let's see what this next paragraph has. I think it
let
might
me,
be
let me
40.
Back up 1 second, Jerry. The fi that
final.
was a final result. But the real final result was that I was asked to put on that workshop for everyone, thousands of people in the company. And we did for the next 2 years. And then I became the director of the corporate university. But that was how successful the workshop was.
Thanks, John. Let me end with this paragraph on page 22, Roman numeral 22. Now, what does all of that mean? He asked. Not everybody is going to awaken. Oh, indeed, they will. In their own good time, yes. But any sentient being will have a realization of who it thought it was as it moves to the next level of tone. In other words, you come face to face with the reality that you've created. Here is the world that I've created. Here is the way I perceive myself. Imagine you stand before a doorway. You are quite familiar with the room you live in, or at least you think you are. But when you step in through the doorway and you turn to look back on what you had created, you are always surprised. Oh, look at how I live and what I thought was so. The new room, you see, is where you now establish yourself, and your alignment in the new room renders all things new. I'm going to ask you to put your books down. Get comfortable in your place. Take a couple of deep breaths. Close your eyes if you like. You can imagine if you like looking back on this last 45 minutes or so. Just observing what has transpired with you. No struggle, nothing forced. But each one of us, in our own way, and together as well, have created a spaciousness. Best word I can think of. Created a spaciousness where we've experienced oneness. Healing, peacefulness, joyfulness, acceptance, surrender, compassion, and it's all still here. So I would encourage each one of us to hold that very gently, reverently, gratefully. Thank you, thank you. Deep breath. Stretch your belly. You can open your eyes when you're ready. And on this Easter Sunday, and all Sundays actually, I want to thank you all for your continued love and support through Unity, through this class, through our work that we have dedicated ourselves to together. And imagine, if you will, metaphorically, that the stone has been rolled back. The tomb is empty. Where'd he go? Right here, man. Right here. Hope you have a great weekend. See you again soon. Take care, guys.
Thank you,
Jerry.
Love
you. Jerry.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Peace, guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Welcome.
Thank you, Jerry.